Good afternoon, and thank you for joining our CMS COVID-19 call to discuss the agency's fourth interim final rule with comment, also known as the IFC-4. On today's call, we'll be joined by a number of our subject matter experts to answer your questions related to IFC-4, and we also encourage you to join our office hours, which will take place next Tuesday, November 3rd at 5 p.m. Eastern. It's now my pleasure to introduce CMS Administrator Seema Verma. Administrator, over to you.
Thank you, Alina, and thank you all for joining today's call on CMS's comprehensive strategy on vaccine coverage and therapeutics. This week, we announced our fourth interim final rule during the COVID public health emergency, as well as a set of toolkits for providers, states, and insurers. The toolkits provide critical, understandable information on vaccine coverage and administration, Medicare reimbursement, and how to enroll in Medicare to administer the vaccine. Together, these announcements represent a crucial plank in the Trump administration's comprehensive strategy to ensure broad vaccine access and coverage for all Americans, and to guarantee that seniors are prioritized for new COVID treatments and therapeutics. So let me start with the rule. This is our fourth COVID-related regulation. The three prior ones, as many of you know, have relaxed regulations to accelerate telehealth revolution, allowed hospitals to expand their capacity, and boosted our healthcare workforce. They've also placed new requirements on nursing homes, increased testing capacity, and provided flexibility to providers on the front lines. The rule, in turn, fulfills two of President Trump's highest priorities, guaranteeing that Americans have access to a COVID-19 vaccine at no cost when one becomes available, and ensuring that potentially life-saving therapeutics are available to seniors who need them. Under normal circumstances, rules like these take about a year, so four in just over 6 months represents a truly historic output for CMS, and I'm grateful to the dedicated staff that have worked so hard to turn these rules out in record time. The day a vaccine is approved by the FDA will be a great day in the history of our nation and the entire world. It will be a turning point in our war against this virus and mark the beginning of the end of a pandemic that has claimed too many precious lives and upended virtually everything. With work on a vaccine progressing at a pace worthy of the name, Operation Warp Speed, that day may not be too far. As you know, there are several vaccines in phase three trials. Production and distribution plans are well underway, and CMS is doing its part by laying the essential groundwork for coverage and payment when a vaccine does arrive. So it'll be widely available and accessible to seniors and every American. First, the rule establishes that any COVID-19 vaccine receiving Food and Drug Administration, emergency use authorization, or standard approval will be covered by Medicare Part B as a preventative vaccine at no cost to Medicare beneficiaries. This clarifies through regulation that Congress's intent in the CARES Act was to cover any vaccine authorized for use by the FDA regardless of its path. While the federal government is paying for the vaccine, insurers, including Medicare, Medicaid, and private plans, must cover the cost of administering it. The rule removes any existing ambiguity around Medicare's coverage of the COVID-19 vaccine and allows us to focus on the paramount goal of ensuring that all of Medicare's 62 million beneficiaries, including those enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan, can receive the vaccine at the provider of their choice, again, at no cost. Second, the rule requires that most private insurance plans, including individual health plans and employer plans, to provide both in-network and out-of-network coverage for the vaccine at no cost to their members. And this is going to represent about 200 million Americans. In addition, providers who receive free COVID-19 vaccines from the federal government will be prohibited from charging consumers any additional cost for the administration of the vaccine beyond what their insurance covers. So, no surprise billing or balance billing for vaccines. That's going to be strictly prohibited. To round out coverage across all of CMS's programs, the 68 million beneficiaries on Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance programs will also be covered for their COVID-19 vaccine cost-free. Additionally, for anyone without insurance, the government has worked to ensure that the vaccine's administration is free and will be using the provider relief fund to cover these costs. Third, The rule prepares for a new generation of COVID-19 treatments that may be approved or authorized by the FDA. The President has made clear that Medicare beneficiaries deserve timely access to therapeutics that have been proven to be safe and effective in treating those with COVID-19. Our job at Medicare is to make sure that as these medications enter the market, they can be immediately accessed by seniors who need them. To that end, we are announcing changes to improve Medicare payment to hospitals for emerging COVID-19 therapeutics for both the inpatient and outpatient settings. This will eliminate financial disincentives that hospitals may face for furnishing potentially life-saving treatments to America's seniors. Under our current rules, Medicare payments are fixed for services and treatments provided in the hospital inpatient setting. COVID-19 treatments have been handled under that traditional hospital payment or fixed reimbursement. Traditionally, when a hospital's cost for a particular patient exceeds Medicare payments, the hospital can qualify for additional outlier payments, but only after their costs exceed a threshold of about $30,000. But under our rule, Medicare will pay an additional 65% of the cost for innovative COVID therapies authorized or approved by the FDA, provided in the inpatient hospital setting when treatment costs exceed the Medicare payment up to that $30,000 threshold. And, of course, if a hospital still exceeds the threshold, it can still qualify for an outlier payment. So, in short, we are bridging the gap between the standard payment and the outlier payment. And the policy is modeled on how we traditionally handled payments for new technology, but this policy is unprecedented. Unlike our current policy for new technology add-on payments that require a year-long application process, new COVID-19 therapeutics will automatically qualify for additional payment during the public health emergency after they've been approved by the FDA. Now, for patients that receive a COVID treatment in a hospital outpatient department, such as an observation stay or emergency department visit, the rule will ensure that Medicare pays separately for the COVID-19 drug rather than having those drug costs bundled into the traditional hospital outpatient payment. And we're also putting out information on how administration for new infusion therapies designed for the outpatient setting could be billed in the event that one is approved or authorized by the FDA. These efforts build on other financing methods that we've provided to hospitals to take care of patients with COVID-19, such as a 20% increase for COVID inpatient hospitalizations in Medicare, as well as funding through the Provider Relief Fund. By building the payment infrastructure ahead of time for both the future vaccine and future therapeutics, CMS is making sure that providers, both public and private, are uninhibited by the typical bureaucratic hurdles when vaccines and treatments are approved by the FDA. The rule also delivers on another one of President Trump's priorities, and that's price transparency. As many of you know, we released a large price transparency rule just yesterday. It's going to require insurance companies to post all of their prices, and it's also going to require that they provide a personalized estimate for their members. But this price transparency effort is around our test for COVID-19, and it's going to require that providers make the cash price of COVID-19 diagnostic tests readily available to patients, and that goes into effect right away. Providers must already clearly post their cash price for COVID-19 tests on their website, but if they don't have it their own website, the rule requires to make the cash price available in writing within 2 business days and through signage. The rule is going to give CMS discretion to take additional enforcement actions to ensure compliance with these transparency requirements. Providers that are noncompliant may be subject to civil monetary penalties up to $300 per day. As I mentioned, we also released a new slew of toolkits on the vaccine to a range of stakeholders, including providers, private insurers, and state Medicaid programs. The provider toolkit makes it clear that we're eager to securely enroll as many providers as possible in our programs, including those non-traditional ones, in order to make the eventual vaccines as widely and conveniently available as possible. The simple step-by-step process for provider enrollment is laid out in the toolkit, and our hotline process will validate requests within 24 hours. So many novel immunization sites, such as pharmacies and schools and other non-traditional or non-Medicare providers can host enrolled providers for vaccine administration. The toolkits also provide current and prospective providers, whether in Medicare, Medicare Advantage, or Medicaid or private insurance, with guidance on how to bill, handle new vaccine codes, and interact seamlessly with whatever payer under which they are operating. And we're working closely with the AMA to release specific billing codes for each vaccine. In addition, these toolkits delineate exactly how much Medicare will pay for each dose in the vaccine series, $17 for the first one and $28 for the second. Now, these rates are higher than usual for vaccines because they factor in the additional required reporting to the CDC and Operation Warp Speed, as well as patient outreach and counseling to make sure that beneficiaries are receiving both the first and second rounds of the vaccine. And we're hopeful that this information can be a tool for state Medicaid programs and private payers to simplify administrative burden and complexity for providers. So hopefully it'll be a model for reimbursement for administering the vaccine. Also, Medicare will also pay directly for the COVID-19 vaccine and its administration for beneficiaries enrolled in Medicare Advantage. So our MA plans will not be responsible for reimbursing providers to administer it. Finally, CMS continues to support our state Medicaid programs. To date, we've approved over 580 COVID-related waivers because states need flexibility to manage their programs during this pandemic, and that's why we're providing them with clear guidance on the requirements to maintain eligibility for enrolled beneficiaries, make changes to beneficiary coverage and cost sharing, while continuing to receive the temporary increase in federal funding provided through the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. The other piece of this is that there is a state Medicaid program toolkit, which sort of goes over everything that they need to know about vaccine administration. During the public health emergency, all of the vaccines are covered for all populations with no cost sharing, but after the public health emergency, states will have to review their coverage, and if they want to make changes, we've laid out some of the required spots or waivers that they might need. The COVID-19 pandemic has taken a dire toll on our country, just as it has on countries around the world. And thankfully, the policies contained in this rule will provide clarity on coverage and take unprecedented and timely action to protect Americans, especially seniors and Medicaid beneficiaries. And they represent the definitive framework that will allow a vaccine combined with new therapeutics to bring the pandemic to a close. Thank you, and with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions, and we're also joined by the CMS staff that can help answer any questions that you might have. Thank you. Alina, do you want to open up the line?
Sounds great. Operator, can you please give instructions for questions? Thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to inform everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. We have your first question from a participant, phone number ending in 3354. Your line's open.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much for this call and this presentation. I just had a quick question about the effective date of this interim final rule. When I was reading it, I saw that the effective date was the date that it was listed in the in the Federal Register. And I just wanted to double check that it hadn't yet been posted there. Or if you can give any clarity on the effective date, that would be great.
Hi, this is Jeff Wu. I can take that question. So it has not posted yet. When it posts with the Federal Register, that indeed will be the day. As folks probably know, it usually just takes a couple of days for the Federal Register process and post. So I think we anticipate that will happen imminently, and you're correct, as soon as that posting occurs, the rule is effective.
Great. Thank you very much.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. We have your next question from the participant. Phone number ending in 1554. Your line's open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You mentioned the pharmaceutical itself for the vaccine product and also the administration fee or the cost of administering. Can you discuss a little bit about the coverage of the vaccine itself, the product, versus the coverage of the administration of the product?
So I'm going to take that question. So the cost of the actual vaccine is going to be covered by the federal government. We're already in contract with the manufacturers. Production's already started. We're expecting about 100 million doses by the end of the year and 700 million by the beginning of the next quarter of next year. So the announcement that we were making in the Medicare program was about the cost of administration of the vaccine. So in Medicare, we're covering that cost. Obviously, that's going to be covered in Medicaid, and the rule also covered for private insurance companies that they need to cover the cost of administering it. And if anybody's uninsured, the federal government will use provider relief funds to cover the administration cost.
Thank you.
We have your next question from Kayla Shankol. Your line's open.
Hi, thanks. This is Kayla Shankol from the National Association of Chain Drug Stores. I have a question about the streamlined process for enrolling new mass immunizers. Thank you for the expedited 24-hour process in the IFR. But the IFR does say that Medicare will be providing these enrollment, any new enrolled mass immunizers information to state Medicaid programs. And I was curious, what is the significance of that for the state Medicaid programs? Is that meant to, I guess, just could you explain your thinking a little bit on that for the significance to state Medicaid programs to have that information on new mass immunizers?
Hi, this is Sabine. I can take that question. So what we're doing is that if a provider wants to be enrolled also in the Medicaid program, we're trying to make it easier by sharing any data that we have in Medicare with the state so that they can process your enrollment that much quicker.
And I have a follow-up question to that. Have you heard from state that this information may be sufficient enough for a pharmacist or a pharmacy to streamline their enrollment process into the Medicaid program? Is there an understanding that if you are enrolled in Medicare that it might be sufficient at the state level as well?
I think it's going to depend on a state-to-state basis, but they will leverage what they can. They most likely will reach out to the provider to get any additional information that they need or additional screening that they would have to do. But they are able to leverage Medicare data to process the enrollment on their end.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
We have your next question from the phone numbers ending in 0844. Your line's open.
Yes, this is Dale Gibson. I wanted to ask a question about critical access hospitals. You know, you were talking about how much, you know, cost is going to rise. Critical access hospitals are paid on a per diem based on costs from previous years. You know, with the COVID-19, their cost is going to be up, you know, during a time frame when their per diem was established on probably lesser cost. Is there any provision for critical access hospitals, or are they just going to have to make that up on the next cost report?
Hi, I'm actually not sure we have the right folks to respond to that in detail on this call. We can check with our colleagues and try and answer it on the Tuesday office hours call.
All right, thank you.
We have your next question from the participant. Phone number ending in 3861, your line's open.
Thank you. This is David with the American Dental Association. Do you know if additional providers will end up being included for mass immunizers, for example, dentists, and will all providers that do become mass immunizers have to participate in Medicare or enroll in Medicare in order to do this?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question again?
Will CMS end up expanding the types of providers to include dentists or other types of providers that already aren't included as mass immunizers? And will
provider? Yeah, I think that the toolkit sort of addressed this issue. We are trying to expand the number of mass immunizers. And so, you know, sort of spell out the qualifications. But I think, you know, suffice to say that we are looking at having non-traditional providers with this, which is why, you know, we're really building on the structure of the mass immunizer program. So we can follow up with you, but I think it's pretty wide. I mean, we're trying to encourage as many people to come into the program as possible.
Okay. So even if they do expand further, everyone still will have to enroll into Medicare.
Yes. Correct. Now, that's only to be able to provide the immunization to Medicare beneficiaries. And as they indicated earlier on the call, we're going to be sending all of the enrolled providers all the information that we have. We'll share it with the state Medicaid programs, but it'll be up to the state Medicaid programs about whether they'll want to accept that or not. And then in terms of, you know, other insurance companies, this, if you're not in, if you obviously don't have a contract with that insurance company, you'd be considered an out-of-network provider. And I think the point we were making with the rule is that there's still no balance billing or anything like that, so you'd have to accept whatever that insurance company is reimbursing for the administration of the vaccine.
Thank you.
We have your next question from Brenda Schwilke. Your line's open.
Thank you so much. Good job pronouncing my last name. Hi, my name is Brenda Schwilke, and I just have a couple quick questions, and they should be very easy. First, the effective date is not going to be retroactive to the beginning of March, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Next, is so any Medicare or Med Advantage, excuse me, any Med Advantage patient needs to be billed to Medicare fee-for-service when we provide the immunizations?
Correct.
Okay. Final question. Do you require an order? And what if we go out in a mobile van? Are you going to require supervision of the mass, you know, when we try to go out and reach the homeless population?
Liz, do you want to answer that?
Well, so for Medicare, we don't think that you need an order. We're still tightening that up, but I believe that would be easier.
Okay.
Obviously, depending on what insurance coverage the patient has, there may be a different answer.
Sure.
But
totally get it. But the homeless population, that 99% are uninsured, to be clear, we can bill them to the, I'm assuming to the, how are we going to bill those people that don't have insurance at all? Yes, I get that we're getting it paid out of a different bucket, but.
Yeah, so they're going to put out some more information from HHS because they handle the provider relief fund, but they'll put some information. It's probably pretty similar to what we've done today with providing for people that are uninsured and their COVID-related costs. So it'll likely
awesome.
Be that same portal.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so very much.
We have your next question from the participant. Phone number ending in 0114. Your line's open.
Hello, yes. This is Nicholas Alford calling from Florida. And this may be addressed in the toolkit, but I wanted to know what do states have to do in relation to the public health emergency and the increased FMAP? Or is there anything that we can do?
Oliver, do you want to take that and also explain the changes in IFC 4?
Sure. So there are a number of requirements for states that are accepting the enhanced FMAP, one of which is maintaining a maintenance of effort for enrollment for individuals who are enrolled as of the beginning of the public health emergency. We've made some modifications to that requirement in ISP4 in this rule that we're talking about today that would give states a little bit more flexibility to move individuals between categories of eligibility as long as they maintain similar benefits. As well as to make adjustments in cost-sharing requirements and benefit requirements within existing statutory limits. So, how those are going to apply are going to vary a little bit from state to state, and so our team in the Medicaid office is available to states to help walk through that, and we also they're going to be discussing that on the weekly all-state calls as well.
Thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. We have your next question from the phone number ending in 5941. Your line's open.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for all of your thoughts into this and everything that's been laid out here. Is additional information coming on how Medicaid providers will be billing and what codes they will use as well?
So this is Calder again. We will have to kind of be watchful of the individual state Medicaid agencies as they release information that are specific to their programs. But we have released a toolkit for states to kind of make those assessments. And then there's also just general information available on our website now for providers at large, where we'll have information about, billing and coding that will apply more broadly. But certainly there will be some need to kind of monitor it on a state-by-state basis for any differences that occur there. So we encourage you to go reach back out to your state Medicaid programs.
So for the public health emergency period, where it's all provided, if a state's receiving the 6.2 FMAP, will they use the same Medicare code, or will that vary by state?
I think we expect that states and other payers will we're encouraging states and other payers to look to Medicare as a model and follow those same protocols. But we've just released this information to states as well, and so they need some time to digest that. But that's certainly our expectation.
And then is there additional information forthcoming on the volume of vaccines that will go to states? Or it says the toolkit that the federal government will be purchasing, are there a certain number that will be available for Medicaid and by state Medicaid program?
I think that's probably something that we don't have the right folks on this call to address. But that's managed out of a different part of HHS, we would refer you back to the HHS and Operation Warp Speed folks, as well as just the state public health folks that are coordinating on that front.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. And thanks everyone for joining our call today. As I mentioned, we do have our CMS COVID-19 office hours this upcoming Tuesday, November 3rd at 5 p.m. Eastern, and we hope that you'll join us there. In the meantime, have a great rest of your day and enjoy your weekend. Take care.